her blue eyes intense and fascinated, as if he were an animal in a zoo and she were making a study of him. He remembered the purity of her concentration, how she'd seemed to be hunting for something, and how he'd wanted to lash out at her and teach her a lesson. And then she'd surprised him completely. She'd reached through the bars all on her own to caress the dampness on his brow, just stuck her hand in, despite the warning hiss from her bodyguards. "Do you want to stay?" she'd asked, and her blue eyes had been steady and unafraid. And Angel had nodded, sensing opportunity. The bodyguards had pulled him out of the cell and put him in a room without windows, made him wait, sweltering, for her to come. "I hear you've taken bullets," she said when she finally sat across from him. Angel looked at her with contempt and lifted his shirt, all machismo, showing puckered scars.
"I took a few."
"That's good. The work I've got for you might involve a few."
"Why'd I want to get shot for you?"
"Because I pay better." She smiled slightly. "And I'll give you decent ballistic armor. With a little luck, you might even live."
"I ain't afraid of dying."
It made Angel smile now, thinking back. He hadn't been afraid. Not of dying in a Vegas garbage truck, and not of Catherine Case. He'd faced his own death for so long by that time that it had become a best friend. This doll lady wasn't nothing. Angel had La Santa Muerte tattooed on his back. He put his life in the skinny lady's hands. Death was his best girl now.
"Why me?" he'd asked.
"You fit a profile I can use. You're aggressive, but you have sufficient impulse control. You're intelligent. You're flexible to changing circumstances. You're tenacious." She looked up at him. "It doesn't hurt that you're a ghost as well. We don't have any documentation on you. We have a few fingerprints from a juvie facility in El Paso, but that place..." She'd shrugged. "Maybe there's something down in Mexico, but here, you're a ghost. I have uses for ghosts."
"What you need a ghost to do?"
She'd smiled at that, too. "How are you at cutting throats?" There had been other recruits as well, but over time most of them evaporated. Some, almost immediately, washing out of guardy training camps and police exercises. Some of them had wandered off on their own. Some failed cases increasingly complex requirements. When she'd first hired him, Angel had thought she'd wanted a shooter. But she had him learning how to do everything from read a legal contract to plant heavy explosives. Plenty of people washed out. Angel thrived. And in return, the Queen of Colorado knighted him. She gave him residence permits in Cypress One, bequeathed upon him driver's licenses and bank accounts, badges and uniforms. Camel Corps first, but later others, and not all of them hers to give. Colorado State Patrol, Arizona Criminal Investigations Division, Utah National Guard, Bureau of Reclamation, Phoenix PD, Bureau of Land Management, FBI. Identities and vehicles and uniforms and badges came and went, depending on where the Queen needed a knife. Angel took on roles as easily as a chameleon, changing colors to fit each new task, shedding identities as easily as a snake sheds skin. Whoever he'd been in that prison cell, it was many skins ago. The Tesla's door opened, letting in a blaze of heat. Ortiz held the door for his boss, deferential. Case settled into the passenger seat, folding her slim legs inside, nodded to Ortiz. The door thudded closed, blocking out light and heat. AC chill cocooned them.
"Paranoid much?"
Angel asked in the sudden silence. Case shrugged. "Threats are up again," she said. "We're in the final stage of the Eastern Pipeline."
"Thought that was stalled,"
Reyes finally smoked out the ranchers who were shooting at our digging crews. We've got drones patrolling all 250 miles now, so if anyone even comes close to that pipeline, we can drop Hades and Hellfire on them. Basin and range country is about to get real damn dry. It was only when Kay smiled that Angel could make out signs of aging. Whatever Hollywood treatments she was getting, they worked. Just the barest crow's feet at the edges of her eyes, but nothing else. Nothing was ever out of place with her. Her clothing was always perfect. Her makeup, her data, her planning, all perfectly analyzed and arranged. Case liked details, all details. She found patterns, fit them together, and then turned them to her use.
"So now they're coming after you," Angel said.
"Threat assessment is tracking a half dozen cells. Ortiz tells me a couple seem credible." She jerked her head toward graffiti on the condominiums surrounding the car. "It sort of makes you miss the old days, when all they did was write editorials and Photoshop my face onto some porno."
"Still," Angel said, "lot of security for some pissed off ranchers."
"Ortiz keeps reminding me it only takes one bullet, and since they can't shoot down a drone, they think that makes it easier to try for me."
"Bad news for them,"
Case laughed. "If they weren't trying to blow my brains out, I'd actually feel sorry for them. All those fevered people full of their..." She paused, picking through words. "Faith. Their faith." She nodded, settling on the word she liked. "And they think that because they have faith, they can wish the world to be anything they want it to be. They're quite innocent when you think about it, all those boys and girls playing pretend in the desert with their rifles, playing freedom fighters. Such innocent little children."
"Little children with guns."
"In my experience, children with guns typically shoot themselves." She changed the subject. "Tell me about Carver City."
"Milk Run," Angel shrugged. "You tried to put himself back inside, wanted to suicide, but I got him out."
"You're getting soft."
"You're the one who complains about wrongful death suits."
"We should reach out to you. I always liked his dedication. See if he wants to work this side of the river."
"When I dumped him out of the chopper, I told him he should keep his eye out for an offer."
"You should never have let him go. He's all over the news right now, talking about Las Vegas water knives."
"Seriously? Little pissant town like that's getting coverage?"
"Journos love the black helicopters angle."
"You want me to lean on people? Make the story go away?"
"No." Case shook her head. "Journos have the attention span of gnats. By tomorrow they'll be chasing a super tornado in Chicago or some Miami seawall break. We'll lie still, and everyone will forget this ever happened. Even if Carver City wins a class action in a couple years, it won't exist as a town anymore. That's all that matters. Carver City's sucking sand, and we've got their water."
"So how come you don't look happy?" Angel asked. "Carver City's done. We move on. Cut something else, right?"
"Unfortunately, it's not quite that simple." Her brow knitted. Carver City had investors that Braxton's due diligence didn't turn up. An eco-development project was leasing Carver City's water rights. Earthship Sustainable Arcology. Vertical farm, integrated housing, 85% water recycling, sort of a low-rent version of a Cypress development. It turns out that a lot of people were invested.
"People, huh?"
"Connected people," Case said. "A senator from back east, a couple of state reps." The way she said it made Angel glance over, surprised.
"State reps?" he asked. "You mean Nevada state reps? Our guys?"
"Montoya, Clegg, Tuan, LaSalle." Angel couldn't stifle his laughter.
"What the hell were they thinking?"
"Apparently they thought they knew where we stood on Carver City."
"I'll be goddamned."
Angel shook his head.
No wonder you look so surprised. Motherfucker thought he bought himself some solid gold insurance. He had our people in his pocket. When I was down there, he kept saying I was going to piss off powerful people.
Everyone's hedging these days, Kay said. Right after Carver City's water plant went down, I got a call from the governor.
He was in there too?
God, no. But he was fishing for information, trying to know if we were planning any other hits.
Where's he invested?
Who the hell knows? He's too clever to say anything over a line where he might be recorded.
He's still backing you, though, right?
Well, he doesn't get votes if Vegas goes dry. As long as I keep delivering his water, the Southern Nevada Water Authority has carte blanche. We can tax, we can build,
we can cut,
and we can plan for Nevada's economic future, she finished over Angel. But still, every time I turn around, I run into some asshole hedging his bets. You know there are actually bookies who will take bets on what town's going to lose its rights next?
What are the odds?
She gave him a sardonic glance. I try not to look. I've got enough conflict of interest lawsuits on my hands with the Cypress developments.
Yeah, but I could make some real money.
The last time I checked, you weren't exactly underpaid. She squinted out at the dead suburb. I used to think I could at least trust our own people. Now I'm either looking over my shoulder for some redneck with a rifle, or I'm dealing with a mailroom clerk who's leaking our ag water bidding strategy in return for a residence permit in Los Angeles. You can't trust anyone anymore.
Braxton's the one who missed all these state reps, right?
So?
Just saying, he don't normally miss things. Angel shrugged. Didn't used to anyway.
Case glanced over sharply. And?
Just saying, he didn't used to screw up.
Christ, and you think I'm paranoid?
Like you say, it only takes one bullet.
Braxton didn't screw us. She gave Angel a warning look. And I don't need my top water knife feuding with my head of legal.
No problem. Angel grinned and held up his hands. Long as Braxton stays off my back, I stay off his.
She made a noise of annoyance.
This job used to be easy. Before my time.
Not that long before. It used to be that if you negotiated a water swap project with San Diego and JV'd on a desal plant, you looked like a genius. Now?
She shook her head.
Alice is saying that California's running guardies all the way up the river into Wyoming and Colorado. He's seen their choppers on the upper Green River and the Yampa.
Angel glanced over, surprised. I didn't know Alice was working that far upriver.
We're trying to figure out who's got senior rights up there, in case we need to start making new buyout offers.
She made a face.
And California's already there, grabbing upper basin rights ahead of us. We thought renegotiating water transfers on the compact was going to work in our favor. Now it scares the hell out of me. We're playing catch-up. Next thing we know, California could just own Colorado or Wyoming outright.
They'll put the lower Colorado in a straw and claim the EVAP savings, and they'll buy the upper Colorado.
Rules are changing, Angel said. Or maybe there never were any rules. Maybe all we have are habits. Things we do without even knowing why. She laughed.
You know, my daughter still says the Pledge of Allegiance.
I've got 3 different militias assigned to hunting down zoners and Texans who cross our border, and Jessie is still putting her hand on her breast and saying the pledge.
Figure that one out. Every single state has its own border patrol, and my kid still calls herself an American.
Angel shrugged. I never really got patriotism.
No, Case laughed. You wouldn't. Some of us used to believe in it, though. Now we just wave the American flag so the feds won't come down on us for recruiting militias.
Countries,
Angel trailed off, thinking back on his own early life in Mexico, before the cartel states.
They come and go.
And mostly we don't see it when it's coming, Case said.
There's a theory that if we don't have the right words in our vocabularies, we can't even see the things that are right in front of our faces. If we can't describe our reality accurately, we can't see it. Not the other way around. So someone says a word like Mexico or the United States, and maybe that word keeps us from even seeing what's right in front of us. Our own words make us blind.
Except you always see what's coming, Angel said.
Well, I feel like I'm flying blind. She ticked points off on her fingers. Snowpack up in the Rockies. That might as well be zero. No one planned for that. Tick. Dust storms and forest fires are playing hell with our solar grid. No one planned for that. Tick. All that dust is speeding snow melt, so even when we get a good year, it melts too fast or else evaporates. No one planned for that. Tick.
Hydropower, she laughed.
That's shot, except in the spring because you can't get a decent head in the reservoirs.
Tick.
And then there's California putting all these calls on the river. She was regarding her open palm, as if she could divine the future from it.
I've got Ellis over on the Gunnison now, making offers, and I'm afraid we're too late there, too.
It's like we can't catch a break. Someone is always ahead of us. Someone who sees more clearly than we do. Someone who has better words to describe where we're headed.
You sure you don't want me to look into Braxton?
Let it go with Braxton. I've got other people on him already.
Angel laughed. I knew it. You don't like him either.
It's not about liking. It's about trusting. And you're right. He didn't used to screw up.
She paused. I've got something else I want you to look into, though, down in Phoenix.
You want me to cut the CIP? I can do it for good this time.
No. She shook her head violently. We can't get away with anything like that again. Not without real legal cover. The feds have drones watching now, and the last thing we need is the army piling in on Arizona's side. No. I want you to go down to Phoenix and sniff around for me. Something seems to have gone wrong, and I can't get a good read on it.
A read on?
If I knew, I wouldn't be sending you down. I feel like I'm not getting the full story. There's some low buzzing coming out of California, too. They're pissed about something.
Who's buzzing?
She quirked an eyebrow at him. Let's keep this compartmentalized, shall we? Just sniff around. I want another set of eyes down there. An independent set of eyes.
Who's running Phoenix?
Guzman.
Julio?
Yeah.
He's good.
Well, now he's pissing himself and begging to be extracted. Keeps saying he's lost people. He sounds like Chicken Little with the sky falling.
He used to be good.
I probably left him down there too long. Phoenix was supposed to hurry up and die, so I left him in. Instead, they keep holding on by their fingernails. You know they're even building an arcology now? Some of it's already up and running.
Little late for that.
Chinese solar energy money and narco dollars. Apparently you can do anything with that combination.
Water does flow toward money.
Well, between the cartel states and Chinese energy developers,
that's a lot of money.
It's almost like Phoenix could be a player again. A few weeks ago, Julio was telling me he had a line on something big, and then suddenly things go wrong for him, and he starts panicking and begging to come across the river. I want you to dig into whatever got Julio so excited before he started jumping at his own shadow. There aren't many people I trust right now, and this...
She trailed off.
Just feels wrong. I want you to report directly to me. Don't go through SNWA channels.
Don't want the governor looking over our shoulder?
Case looked disgusted. You know, there was a time when we could actually trust our own people. They made small talk for a few more minutes, but Angel could tell Case was already on to her next problem. He'd been assigned, fitted into her mosaic of the world. And now,
Her restless mind had moved on to other data and other problems. A minute later, she wished him luck and climbed out of the Tesla. Her entourage of armored SUVs ground out over broken glass, leaving Angel alone, staring out at the broken landscape the case had created with the stroke of a pen. Chapter 5. A truck idled in the alley behind Lucy's house, a predatory gasoline growl. It had been rumbling outside for 10 minutes and didn't seem to be leaving.
"Are you even listening to me?" Anna asked.
Lucy's sister was staring out from the computer screen, her expression a mix of frustration and pained compassion. Cool gray Vancouver lights streamed through floor-to-ceiling windows behind her.
"It's okay if you want to leave."
The truck wasn't leaving. Its engine revved, rattling Lucy's windows before falling back to base grumble. Lucy stifled the urge to go outside and challenge the assholes.
"Keep saying it's horrible," Anna was saying. "You don't need to prove anything to anyone. You've stayed longer than any journalist who's been assigned down there. You've beaten them all, so leave."
"It's not that simple."
"It is, though. For you, it is. You've got New England ID. You're probably one of the last people down there who can just walk right out. And yet, for some reason, you're still there. Dad says you're begging to get yourself killed."
"I'm not. Believe me."
"You're afraid, though."
"I'm not afraid."
"Then why are you calling?"
Anna had her there. Lucy wasn't the one who called. That was Anna's role. Anna was the one who maintained relationships. Anna, who still had her East Coast manners and still sent physical Christmas cards every year. Real cards in real paper, crafted with real scissors and the help of her sweetly real children. Intricate images of snowflakes and evergreens accompanying red-ribboned gift boxes containing replacement REI microfilters for Lucy's dust mask. Anna always was there, reaching out,
maintaining contact,
caring.
"Lucy?"
There wasn't a single bar on Anna's windows, Lucy realized. Her window glass was beaded with rain, and her garden beyond the glass was emerald, and there wasn't a single bar to keep Anna's family safe.
"Things are just difficult right now," Lucy said finally.
In her mind, this was code for, "Someone pried my friend's eyes out and dumped him in the middle of the Golden Mile," but Anna couldn't decrypt the words, which was probably best for both of them. Outside, the truck revved its engine again.
"What's that sound?"
Anna asked.
"A truck." "Who the hell makes trucks like that anymore?"
Lucy made herself laugh.
"It's part of the culture."
Stacy and Ant were giggling off-screen, playing with Legos, programming some creation of theirs to chase the cat around the house. Lucy suppressed an almost overwhelming urge to reach out and touch the screen.
"I'm not looking to move," Lucy said. "I just wanted to say hi, that's all."
"Look, Mommy,"
Stacy shrieked.
"Grumpy Pete's eating it."
Peals of laughter. Anna turned to tell her children to pipe down, but even Lucy could tell she didn't mean it. Stacy and Aunt's laughter quieted to whispers for a few moments, then exploded again. Lucy caught a glimpse of the cat, riding on the back of a Rover the pair had built. Stacy had an American football helmet on her head, and it looked as though Aunt had on the luchador mask that Lucy had given him the last time she'd come up to visit. It was surreal. Their two realities separated by a thin wafer of computer screen. So close that Lucy imagined that if she were to take a hammer, she could crack the distance between them and pass through to that green, safe place. Anna turned serious again.
"What's going on down there, really?"
Lucy broke off.
"I just missed you."
"I like seeing a place where kids don't know to be afraid."
Seeing Stacy and Aunt alive and well reminded her of the first body she'd covered. A girl not much older than Stacy. A pretty Hispanic girl. Marionette shattered, lying naked in the bottom of a swimming pool. Lucy could still remember Ray Torres standing beside her, taking a drag on a cigarette, telling her,
"You don't got to write about the bodies."
Lucy remembered Torres as a good old boy cop in a good old boy cowboy hat and tight faded Levi's. A big belt buckle and polished gray cowboy boots. He'd smirked at her, from behind black wrap mirrored cop sunglasses that ran facial recognition even as they talked.
"There's plenty of other shit to vulture on in this city," he said.
A few med techs and cops had been down in the dusty swimming pool with the girl, stomping around the body, trying to make sense of what they were seeing. When Lucy ignored them, Torres had tried again.
"This ain't the kind of thing a pretty Connecticut girl like you wants to be writing about."
"Don't tell me what to do," she'd replied. At least, that was how she remembered it now. She remembered herself as being tough, standing up to the patronizing cop. She definitely remembered Torres tipping his cowboy hat in response and ambling off to join the cops and EMTs beside the ambulance. The girl had been dumped like trash. She couldn't have been much into her teens, and now she was dead in the bottom of a dirty turquoise hole that was bluer than the sky overhead. Wild dogs had been down in there with her, tugging her back and forth, worrying at her guts, leaving trails of bloody mud before fleeing at the arrival of crime scene techs. The girl's blood had clotted. The scrapes on her knees were black blood and gray dust. A young girl with pixie-cut black hair and little silver heart earrings who could have been anybody. Except she had become nobody. Torres and his friends had joked with one another, occasionally glancing in Lucy's direction as they smoked their cigarettes, saying things in Spanish that she couldn't catch. Lucy's Spanish had been shit then. She'd forced herself to stand at the pool's edge, looking down at the girl's snapped arms and legs longer than she wanted, feeling the men's eyes on her, trying to prove she wasn't intimidated by Torres's gaze. And then Torres had come back over, tipping his cowboy hat at her again. "Seriously, don't write about the bodies. They got a way of making more trouble than they're worth." "What about her?" Lucy had asked. "Doesn't she deserve to be remembered?"
"Her? She don't care now. Hell, maybe she's glad she ain't here. Maybe she's glad she finally found a way out of this damn place."
"You're not even going to investigate?" The cowboy laughed.
"Investigate what? Another dead Texan?"
He shook his head.
"Shit. The whole city's a suspect. Who misses these people?"
"You're disgusting."
"Hey." He grabbed her arm.
"I'm serious about the bodies. You want to make your career in the blood rags, there's plenty to see. But some bodies..."
He jerked his head toward the girl in the bottom of the empty pool.
"They aren't worth the heat."
"What's so special about this girl?"
"Tell you what. I'll put you in touch with the editor over at Rio de Sangre. You can hit all the bodies for them. I can even give you exclusive ride-along if you want. After this girl, I got two cholobis dropped over on Maricopa in a drive-by. Plus I got five more swimmers I still got to hit. Soon as my partner gets back."
"Swimmers?" Lucy asked. Torres had laughed, exasperated.
"God damn, girl, you are wet."
He'd walked away, shaking his head, chuckling.
"Wet and soft."
Back then, Lucy hadn't known how easy it was to write the wrong thing. How easy it was to end up slumped over your steering wheel with a bullet in your head. She'd been wet and soft then, just as Anna was wet and soft now.
"You can live with us, you know," Anna said.
"Arvin can arrange it through the National Professionals Program. You can come to the university first. With your credentials, you'd be a shoo-in for visas. And Stacy and Aunt would love to have you with us.
There's mold up there. Lucy tried to make herself laugh.
Even your underwear molds. They've got studies that say how bad that is for your health.
Be serious, Lucy. I miss you. The kids miss you. You're alone down there. And there are nice men up here.
Nice Canadian men.
Arvind is a nice Canadian man.
Lucy looked at her sister helplessly. There wasn't anything to say. Anna stared back at her, equally helpless. An entire lecture held back. All the things she desperately wanted to say, but wouldn't.
You're insane. You're being stupid. I've never seen someone so willfully suicidal. Normal people don't do what you do.
All of it held back, because what was the point of arguing? However much Lucy might want to slip through the looking glass and join her sister's world, she didn't want Anna's world infected with all the things that were inside her now. She wanted, no, needed this glass between them, protecting Anna and Arvind and the kids. It meant that there was still some place where the world wasn't falling to pieces. Finally, Anna relented and made herself laugh.
Don't stop talking to me just because I'm a pain in the ass. You know I love you.
I only beat you because I love you.
Exactly.
Anna's smile was bright with everything she wasn't allowing herself to say. And then she turned from the camera.
Stacy, Aunt, come talk to Aunt Lucy. You were telling me all week you wanted to talk to her, and here she is calling us.
The kids got on screen, and they were adorable, and Lucy thought that if any kids were worth having, Stacy and Aunt were a delight. And then Arvind passed by, smiling at her. His dark skin so much a contrast with his wife's paleness. And then he was scooping the kids off to wash their hands and eat their lunch. Anna reached out and touched the screen.
I worry,
she said.
That's all, I just worry.
I know, Lucy said. I love you too. They said their goodbyes and closed the connection, leaving Lucy staring at the darkened screen, thinking about all the warnings and caretaking and advice that people held back because they were too afraid of severing relationships, even though they could see disaster looming.
I just worry.
I worry too,
Lucy murmured. The truth she couldn't say to Anna. Outside in the alley, the truck revved its engine again. Irritated, Lucy stood up and grabbed her pistol.
All right, asshole, let's see what you've got.
Sunny wagged his tail hopefully at Lucy's sudden movement.
Stay,
Lucy ordered. She worked the deadbolts, chambered around, took a deep breath, and yanked open the door. Sunshine blazed down as she strode across the yard. Just beyond her chicken wire fencing, the pickup waited, rumbling. Cherry red paint, massive, jacked-up tires, tinted windows. Lucy couldn't see the driver through the glass, but she knew he was looking at her. Lucy held her pistol at her hip, ready to lift and fire, wondering if someone was already pointing a gun at her from within the cab. Wondering if she should already be shooting.
What do you want? She shouted as she stormed closer. What the fuck do you want?
The truck gunned its engine. Its tires spit gravel, and it took off, tearing down the alley, leaving dust and discarded clear sacks billowing in its wake. Lucy stared after the retreating truck, her heart pounding. Dust drifted over her, lazy and feathery. She coughed and wiped at sweat with the back of her arm, wishing she'd gotten a license plate.
Am I going insane?
Either someone was stalking her, or she'd just been about to shoot some innocent kid because she was losing her mind to paranoia. Either way, she was a walking tragedy. She could practically hear Ray Torres and Anna both shouting at her to run like hell. A whole Greek chorus right inside her head. From inside the house, Sunny barked, annoyed at being abandoned. Lucy went and opened the door. The dog came bounding out in an eager dash of jangling tags and flopping pink tongue. He trotted to her truck and sat, waiting expectantly for her to open the cab.
Christ, not you too.
Sunny panted eagerly. Lucy shoved her pistol into the back of her jeans.
We're not going for a ride,
she told him. Sunny gave her a disgusted look.
What?
Lucy asked.
If you want to go back inside, fine. Or you can stay outside. I'm going to sweep. We're not going for a ride.
Sunny crawled under the truck and flopped down. Lucy got the dust broom. Sunny watched her with accusing eyes.
You and Anna, she muttered.
She started sweeping off the sandstone slabs of her patio, obliterating the pale dunes that had settled into angles of repose around the edges of her home. Clouds of grit enveloped her, making her sneeze and cough. She could almost hear Anna scolding her for being too casual with her lungs. In the beginning, Lucy had been religious about using her dust mask and changing its filter, religious about shielding her lungs against wildfire smoke and dust and valley fever. But after a while, it was hard to care about invisible airborne coccidioides fungi anymore. She lived here. This was her life. A dry hacking cough was simply part of that. She could remember her shiny REI dust mask dangling around her neck when she'd first arrived in Phoenix, straight out of J school and ready to dig up her first big scoop. Christ, she'd been wet. With the patio cleared, Lucy propped a ladder against the house and climbed. From the flat expanse of the roof, Phoenix spread before her. Traffic and suburbs, a dust-draped sprawl of low-rises and abandoned single families slumping across the flat desert basin. Mesa, Tempe, Chandler, Gilbert, Scottsdale. The remains of a metropolitan sea that had flooded the open basin, filling it with houses and arrow-straight boulevards, until they lapped against the saguaro-studded mountains at its rim. Sun blazed down, hot and relentless, glaring through a muddy veil of powdered soil kicked up by commuter traffic. Even on a clear day like this, the sky seemed truly blue only directly overhead. Lucy smeared muddy sweat off her brow and wondered if she even knew what true blue looked like anymore. It was possible that she stared up at the sky and called it blue or gray or tan, and it was none of those colors. Dust eternally hazed the air here, and if not dust, then the gray smoke of California forest fires. Maybe she'd forgotten the color blue, and it existed only in her imagination now. Maybe she'd been down in Phoenix for so long that she now made up names for all sorts of things that no longer existed. Blue, gray, clear, cloudy, life, death, safety. She could call the sky blue, and maybe it was. She could call her life safe, and maybe she'd survive. But really, maybe none of those things existed anymore. Blue was just as much a mirage as Ray Torres and his patronizing smile. Nothing lasted in Phoenix. Lucy got to work, shoveling storm dust off her collectors, exposing black silicon surfaces from GE and hair to the sun. She spat on the glass and rubbed pits and scratches muddy clean, scrubbing longer than necessary, knowing that she was being obsessive but working still, because it was easier to clean house than face what she'd seen the night before and what it meant for her now.
Why are you calling?
Anna had asked.
Because my friend had his eyes pried out and I'm afraid I might be next.
She couldn't get the memory of Jamie out of her head. A disassembled person, lying right outside the Hilton Six. She had photos on her camera. She hadn't even realized that she'd snapped them when she was at the scene. Sheer reflex. The first one had almost been too much. She'd set the camera aside,
overwhelmed by what she'd captured. But still, they were there. The abrupt end to the story Jamie had been trying to write for himself. She remembered him sitting in the Hilton Six, polished and confident, saying, "I'm going to be a goddamn fucking fish, Lucy. I'm going to have a swimming pool and boy toys wall to wall, and when I get my Cali visa stamped, I am never coming back." His life mapped out. Jamie was too smart to stay stuck, and too clever to stay alive. She remembered him, too, the night of the deal. Jittery. Smoothing his coat, straightening his tie. Stone sober, but trembling with anticipation. She remembered sitting in his tidy one-bedroom, there to record the moment. "You should let me come along," she'd said. "I like you, Lucy, but no. You get your exclusive after I get my money." "You're afraid I'll try to steal your score," she'd said, making him look over sharply. "You? No." He'd shaken his head. "Every other person in the universe, yes, but you, no." She remembered him re-knotting his tie again and again, something that he normally did without thinking, but that now had him so fumble-fingered that Lucy finally came over to help him. "Thank God for cryptocurrencies," he'd said. "I couldn't do this kind of deal before, not without raising flags. I should probably be making an offering to the patron saint of Bitcoin and crypt gold when it's all done." "You would have just used regular cash," Lucy said. That had made Jamie laugh. "You think it's that kind of deal?" he asked. "You think this is the kind of thing where I walk out of a hotel room with a couple suitcases full of nicely pressed $100 bills? Girl," he shook his head, "you think too small." "How big is this?" Jamie smirked. "How much would you pay to keep a city alive? Or an entire state? What would you pay to keep the Imperial Valley's agriculture from turning into a dust bowl?" "Millions?" Lucy hazarded. That had made Jamie laugh again. "And that, Lucy, is how I know you will never betray me. You think small." The rumble of an engine broke Lucy's thoughts. It was the same truck as before, a predatory, unmuffled grumble. She pulled her gun. Down in the yard, Sunny started barking. He was racing back and forth along the chicken wire fence as the red truck eased down the alley. It slowed, a red gleaming monster, scoping Sunny and the house and her. A shark cruising its prey. Lucy crouched and aimed. Sunny's barking was incessant. He was going crazy. Lucy was afraid he'd jump the fence and go after the truck. The truck rolled slowly past. It didn't stop, just kept going. Lucy straightened, watching it recede down the alley and past the squatter camp at the far end of the block. She wondered if she should have taken a shot. The engine noise faded. Sunny stopped barking and retired to the shade on the porch, looking pleased with himself. Lucy kept waiting, listening, but the truck didn't circle back. The lesson was clear enough, though. She couldn't sit paralyzed any longer. She could either make decisions for herself, or someone else would make them for her. Lucy climbed down from the roof and shook the dust off her clothes. She ran her fingers through her hair and brushed out Sunny's fur. She let him inside, stripping off her own clothes in the dust room, carefully leaving the storm's residues outside her home. Sunny watched her expectantly as she put on indoor clothes, then sat down before her computer. The first taps were hesitant. Embryonic words, a sketch, a history. And then a cascade of letters, tapping faster now, her fingers rhythmic, finding the shape of her story, all the words she'd held back from writing for over a decade because she'd been afraid. All the words, all the accusations pouring out of her and onto the page.
describing the shape of the vortex that was swallowing them all. She wrote about bodies. She wrote about Ray Torres and the swimmer he'd warned Lucy off from so many years ago. She wrote about how he'd ended up slumped over the wheel of his truck after being gunned down.
A man who knew too many things about too many people, and who knew where the bodies were buried.
She wrote about Jamie and the discarded body that he'd become.
She marked him as a person, as an individual, flawed and crazy and passionate.
Horny and angry and brilliant. She'd marked him as someone who might last beyond his dreams and ambitions, a person who would not be erased, despite his killer's attempts to tear away his face. When Lucy was finished, she posted her words along with a single photo of the dust storm hillock that had been her friend. A tombstone. A marker. A chance for Jamie to be something more than another bit of rubble in Phoenix's collapse. She stood and stretched and went and got a beer from her tiny fridge. She went outside to the porch, calling Sunny after her. Was surprised to find the sun was already setting. She'd written the day away.
Lucy toasted the blood-red ball of fire as it sank over the Phoenix sprawl. Toasted Jamie.
Don't write about the bodies. It's not safe. Maybe I never wanted to be safe. It felt good to say it out loud. She didn't want safety. She wanted truth. For once, she wanted truth. Nothing lasted forever, so why should she try to fight her own end? Phoenix would fall as surely as New Orleans and Miami had done, just as Houston and San Antonio and Austin had fallen, just as the Jersey Shore had gone under for the last time. Everything died. Places were blown away or drowned or burned, and it just kept happening. The equilibrium of the world was shifting.
Whole cities were losing their balance as the ground they'd taken for bedrock shifted beneath them and knocked them right on their collective asses.
Maybe it would just keep happening. Maybe it would never end. So why run? If the whole world was burning, why not face it with a beer in your hand, unafraid? For once, unafraid. Lucy switched to tequila. She drank in the darkness, grateful for nightfall and the cool 100 degrees it brought. She wouldn't lock herself away, and she wouldn't run. She would remain here, comfortable in the smoke and the dust and the heat and the dying. She was a part of Phoenix, just like Jamie and Torres. This was home. She wouldn't run. Chapter 6.
Morning for Maria came as gummy eyes, smoky air, and the hack of Sarah's dry cough. Beams of desert sun cut the dimness of the basement, revealing lazy dust motes, concrete floors, and cracked plastic pipes for water and sewer overhead.
The arteries and veins of a house that had died years before. Maria didn't need to check Sarah's phone to know she'd overslept. It was time to be awake, time to be out, time to be selling water. Maria's few clothes dangled from the nails beside the tank tops and ass-hugging shorts that Sarah used in her work. A stuffed frog that Sarah had gotten out of an abandoned house and given to Maria right after her father had died looked down on her. A pink plastic hairbrush of Maria's that they shared lay on a concrete ledge, carefully arrayed beside their frayed toothbrushes and old barrettes, and a couple of tampons that Sarah was saving in case she needed to work during her period.
A scarred red and glittery wheelie suitcase held the rest of their clothes,
a lot of them from Tammy Bayless, before she and her family had gone north. The girl had been their size and just given them the suitcase full of clothes before her father could sell them off.
"Just take them,"
she'd whispered in the darkness. The next day she'd been gone with the rest of her family. Maria rifled through the suitcase and found clothes that were sort of clean. Some days she and Sarah would hang them up and beat them with sticks to get the dirt and dust out. Other days, Sarah would sneak their underwear into the hotels where she worked and sometimes wash things when men let her shower. Maria pulled on shorts and an undaunted t-shirt, ignoring memories of when her mother had washed clothes in a machine and left them folded on her bed. Maria climbed the steps and unlocked the door to the basement. The sudden glare made her eyes tear. Outside, the smoke was thick, a brown haze in the cloudless sky. Ash scents clogged the air. The wind was blowing in from California and the burning Sierras for sure. Maria waited, peeking out the door, watching. Not much stirring yet. Just the few people with work and places to go. Texans who'd been lucky enough to get work at the Taiyang Arcology like her dad. People who knew complex plumbing or could use industrial cutters or knew algae reclamation. The Wen family was up. She could smell cooking noodles in a broth, the smoke of burning 2x4s curled gray over the fence next door, lazy in the still air of the suburb. It looked safe. A good time to be on the move. Maria closed the door again and padded back down the stairs to crouch beside Sarah, shook her. "Come on," she said. "We got to go. Got to get all this water over to Tumi's spot." Sarah groaned. "How come you don't just do it? You want your money? You got to sweat for it." "This water scam is your thing, not mine. I'm just an investor." "Yeah? Give me your sheet." Maria yanked it off Sarah's body, revealing pale flesh and the red nylon panties that the men liked. Sarah curled up, skinny legs pulled up tight, tan lines glaring rings on her thighs. "Come on, Maria, why you gotta be like this? Give me time to wake up, at least." Maria poked her in the ribs. "Score's only half done, girl. Come on. We got to turn our water into money, can't just sit on it. And I want you with me to walk it over." Maria made her voice as authoritative as she could, pretending she had a plan that was in control. But it made her nervous, staring at that pile of water they'd scored, knowing the days of life it would support, knowing that people would be inspired to just take it from her. She needed this water turned into cash, compact paper that she could shove into her bra and have a hope of protecting. "Vultures are circling, girl. We got to do this now, while everyone's asleep. Before Tumi heads out for work, Tumi's our ticket." Sarah sat up, grabbed her sheet back, and pulled it over her head. "I was sleeping." She reminded Maria of a kitten that she'd found mewling inside a banged-up trash can. The kitten hadn't had a mother, probably because some needle boy had caught and cooked her, and there this little kitten was, curled up and begging for something it would never get. Maria had petted the tiny creature, understanding its need, the wishing for milk that would never come, the desperate desire to have someone come back and take care of you. But you couldn't just lie there praying for rescue. Sarah acted hard, but the girl was soft. Even when she peddled ass, she expected someone to be taking care of her. Kept thinking the world gave a damn about her worthless life. Sarah, that kitten, Maria's father, they were all the same. Maria gave Sarah a hard shove. "Come on." Sarah sat up, her blonde hair tousled, squinting. "I'm up, I'm up." She started coughing. Spasms racked her, coughing up the smoke and dryness that had settled in her chest overnight. She reached for one of the bottles of water. "That's our money you're drinking," Maria reminded her. Sarah gave her a dirty look. "It's my money, you mean?" Maria made a face back, then grabbed their clear sack and climbed the basement steps. In the smoky dawn light, she hustled across the red gravel landscaping, flip-flops slapping her heels, to where her father had dug a latrine inside the house's back shed. He'd called it an outhouse, something to civilize their lives, so they wouldn't just be shitting in the open like all the other Texans who couldn't find a Johnny truck in time. Maria closed the door and looped string over a nail to lock it. She crouched over the trench, wrinkling her nose at the stink, opened the clear sack, and peed into it. When she was finished, she hung the sack on a nail, then finished her business, wiping with ragged squares of newsprint that she and Sarah had torn from Rio de Sangre. She pulled up her shorts and hurried out, carrying the half-full clear sack, glad to be back out in dawn's open, smoky air again.
"You got my rent?"
Maria yelped and spun, almost dropping the clear sack as she went down. One of the vet's thugs was leaning against the outhouse, partly shielded by the door. Damien. Thick blonde dreads and a lazy eye that looked wrong at the world. A face pierced with bone and silver, and white skin that had burned and tanned and burned so many times that he was a mottled peeling patchwork of deep golden browns and sun-scorched red. Maria glared at him.
"You scared me."
Damien's cracked lips split into a sly smile. Proud of himself.
"Aw, you got nothing to fear from me, girl. You don't got nothing I want, except rent."
He paused.
"So, you got it?"
Maria got to her feet, carefully holding the unspilled clear sack. It was frightening to find him standing there like that. A chilling reminder that just because the winds didn't raise an alarm didn't mean she was safe. Maria's father might have helped them out by driving Miss Wen to the Red Cross tent in the back of his truck when she'd been septic with her pregnancy. But that didn't mean they owed Maria now. Not if it meant crossing someone who could wipe out their family.
"Don't sneak up at me like that," Maria said. "I don't like it."
Damien just laughed.
"Poor little Tejana don't like being sneaked up on."
He sauntered over to her.
"Call it a free lesson, putita. Lots of people sneak better and hurt harder than me."
He chucked her under the chin.
"Swimming pools are full of girls like you. Free advice? Think like a rabbit and put your damn ears up before you come out of your hole, right?"
Why did she trust him? Maria wondered. It wasn't like he was her friend. There was no doubt that if she didn't make rent, he'd toss her out, or drain her blood and black market it, or sell her ass to make up his quota for the vet. And yet, these days, when she prayed to be protected, more often than not, it was Damien's face that was in her mind. Damien wasn't her friend, but he also didn't hate Texans. Whatever sicknesses he might have, they weren't the kind that fed on the likes of Maria. She took what she could get.
"You got my money?" he asked.
Maria hesitated.
"I still got till tonight."
"I guess that's a no."
When Maria didn't answer, Damien laughed.
"You think you're getting your rent in the next 12 hours? You peddling that tight little culo of yours without telling me?"
Maria hesitated.
"I don't got cash.
I got water. Whole bunch of liters. My rent's in water till I sell it."
Damien smirked.
"Oh, yeah. I heard some little putas made out big at the friendship pump. Got themselves a whole red wagon full of Red Cross water. I ought to tax you just for bringing it in."
"I got to sell it if you want our rent."
"Maybe I take your pay in water right now. Save you the effort."
"This water?"
She held up the clear sack full of dark yellow pee. Damien laughed.
"I don't drink that shit. That's for Texans."
"Once I squeeze it, it's just water."
"Keep telling yourself that."
"He's just testing me," Maria thought. But still, she was afraid.
Damien could just take all her water if he wanted. All that water that she'd gotten so cheap and was supposed to sell so high.
"If you pay me what they'll pay at the Tai Young, you can have it now," she said.
"What they pay at the Tai Young?" he laughed. "You really think you can bargain with me?"
She hesitated, trying to measure the threat. He had to be here because he'd heard about the water. But if she sold to him, she'd just end up breaking even, back to broke again, instead of